Mary. Jate Janna Balabam Jaya Giri Baradari Jaya Giri Baradari Jate Jana Balabam Jaya Giri Baladhari Jaya Giri Baladhari Yasodhanandana Jaya Vajjanarayana Yasodhanandana Jaya Yamuna Chula Vanachari Jaya Kandadi Jaya Ganga Bihari Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Which chapter is it? Canto 1, chapter 10, text number 24. Sava ayam yat padam atrasuraya. Thank you. Is that the wrong one? Yeah, you're right. Sorry about that. Saya sava ayam sakya nukita sakkato.
Sava ayam sakya nukita sakkato.
Vede shugu yeshu chaguya vadibi.
Vede shugu yeshu chaguya vadibi.
Ya eka isho jagadatma lilaya.
Ya eka isho jagadatma lilaya.
Shri jatya vatyati na tatra sajate. Sava ayam sakya nukita sakkato.
Sava ayam sakya nukita sakkato.
Vede shugu yeshu chaguya vadibi.
Vede shugu yeshu chaguya vadibi.
Ka eka isho jagadatma lilaya.
Ka eka isho jagadatma lilaya.
Shuja chavatyati na chattu sajate. Sava ayam sakya nukita sakkato.
Sava ayam sakya nukita sakkato.
Vede shugu yeshu chaguya vadibi.
Vede shugu yeshu chaguya vadibi.
Ka eka isho jagadatma lilaya.
Ka eka isho jagadatma lilaya.
Shuja chavatyati na tatra sajate.
The excellent pastimes.
Vedeshu, in the Vedic literatures. Guyeshu, confidentially. Cha, as also. Guyavadibi, by the confidential devotees. Ya, one who. Eka, one only. Isha, the Supreme Controller, Jagat, of the complete creation, Atma, the Supersoul, Lilaya, by manifestation of pastimes, Shrijati, creates, Avatiyati also maintains and annihilates. Na, never. Chatra,
there.
Sajate
becomes attached to it.
Translation. Oh dear friends, here is that very personality of Godhead whose attractive and confidential pastimes are described in the confidential parts of Vedic literature by his great devotees. It is he only who creates, maintains, and annihilates the material world and yet remains unaffected. Please repeat. Oh dear friends,
oh dear friends,
here is that very personality of Godhead.
Whose attractive and
confidential
pastimes
are described in the confidential parts of Vedic literature
by his great devotees.
It is he only
who creates, maintains, and annihilates
the material world
and yet remains unaffected.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, all the Vedic literatures are glorifying the greatness of Lord Sri Krishna. Here it is confirmed in the Bhagavatam also. The Vedas are expanded by many branches and sub-branches by great devotees and empowered incarnations of the Lord, like Vyas, Narada, Sukadeva Goswami, the Kumaras, Kapila, Prahlad, Janaka, Bali, and Yamaraj. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, the confidential parts of his activities are described by the confidential devotee Sukadeva Goswami. In the Vedanta Sutras or Upanishads, there is only a hint of the confidential parts of his pastimes. In such Vedic literatures as the Upanishads, the Lord has expressively been distinguished from the mundane conception of his existence. His identity being fully spiritual, his form, name, qualities and paraphernalia, etc., have been elaborately distinguished from matter, and therefore he is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent persons as impersonal. But factually he is the Supreme Person, Bhagavan, and he is partially represented as Paramatma, or impersonal Brahman. So the ladies are just saying that Krishna, he is the source of everything, and he is the Supreme Lord who is the cause of all causes and destruction, annihilation, maintenance. Everything comes about by Krishna's will. He expands himself into Lord Shiva to destroy the material creation. Lord Shiva is a very great personality. He does many other things. He helps fallen ghosts get a physical body. He fulfills material desires, but he's actually a form of Krishna. And Vishnu maintains. So Prabhupada explains how maintenance is harder than creation, is harder than destruction. And, like keeping everything clean requires a constant endeavor. You get dust everywhere, and it's a headache. So, but Vishnu does that because nobody else is really capable of doing it in the material world. And Brahma creates, but Brahma had to meditate on the on the mantra. Which mantra did you meditate on? Brahma. he meditated on the first line of the Gayatri, or which line? He just meditated on Om. Anyway, he meditated, and by meditating he got realization about Krishna. So it was only through Krishna that he was able to function as a creator. He got the intelligence from Krishna, because Krishna says, Savasyaham, Savasya Chaham, Hridisthani Vistom, Matasmita Jnana, Pohunam Cha, Vedeshu Deya, Vedeshu Durava, no, Vedeshu, how's it going? Vedeshu. Yeah. So, Vedeshu Durava, Ahamavedya, Vedentakrit, Vedavit, Eva Chaham. So, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, from me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. I am the compiler of the Vedas and the knower of Vedanta. So if we want to know Krishna, we have to study the Vedas. So therefore, a devotee has to make a serious effort to study the Vedas. And the Vedas are practically unlimited, so we have to discriminate against which are the most important parts of the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada, he translated the principal primary Vedas, like the Bhagavad Gita. He wanted to translate the Mahabharata. But at the same time, you know, there are so many other Vedas and so many authors of the Vedas, and all these personalities, he's mentioned a few of them, but there are many more who compiled even more intimate pastimes than the ones he's mentioned. But Srila Prabhupada, he was very systematic in the way he presented Krishna consciousness. And some people didn't have enough patience to go through the systematic presentation that Prabhupada gave, because they wanted to jump immediately to, you know, more what they thought were more nectarian parts. But Prabhupada says that, you know, Krishna fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, of Krishna dancing with the gopis and the rasa dance, it's all Krishna, it's all important to understand. And so Srila Prabhupada, he was very painstaking, very laborious, the way he presented the philosophy. He could have just jumped to the 10th canto and, you know, extrapolated so many nectarian pastimes, but he wanted the tattva. He wanted to establish Krishna consciousness in a very, very solid foundation. So therefore, he spent so much time writing lengthy purports in many of the purports of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, even Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, the purports to the fourth canto, all about, you know, the allegory of Malaya Vraja and, you know, Purna, what's his name? Huh? No, the king. Anyway, it's very elaborate explanation of how, what's his name? The king, huh? Yeah, Prachini Bhasha, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so the whole story is very involved and has a lot of analogies about the time factor and the soldiers of the time and just so many things. But Prabhupada, he went to great lengths to establish the philosophy in a very solid way. And so, you know, the translations of the verses are quite simple. If you just had all the translations, you could probably read the Bhagavad Gita in, you know, a few weeks. But with the purports which explain it, which is so important, because we wouldn't really understand how to practice spiritual life if Prabhupada hadn't extrapolated the meaning, like the Bhagavad Gita. So many people translated the Bhagavad Gita, but without explaining how to practice it, how would they know what the real meaning is? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he's such a great teacher, because he taught us the real meaning of the Vedas, the real meaning of the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Pusarada, great personalities, because Srila Prabhupada, he is the servant of his guru, who's the servant of his guru, and we're all trying to follow Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Manobastam, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam. How's it go? Sri Chaitanya Manobastam. Yeah, so we're all trying to follow, my memory, sorry. But we're all trying to follow Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami, he is such a humble person, even though you can't really be more elevated than Rupa Goswami, being a very intimate associate of Radharani. But when he wrote the Lalita Madhava and the Vidagdha Madhava, he said that, O learned devotees, I am by nature low and fallen, but just because I'm like that, don't think that this literature that I'm writing is really contaminated because of that. He gave the example of somebody who starts a fire to smelt gold. So the gold becomes pure and perfect by being smelted. So similarly, the person that started the fire isn't, you know, he doesn't, even if he's contaminated, he doesn't contaminate the gold. So he's saying that even though he wrote these wonderful literatures, Lalita Madhava, Vidagdha Madhava, they're still wonderful literatures because they describe the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And then one of the verses in the introduction to those books, it says that may the pastimes of Krishna eradicate all sinful desires and destroy all may they eradicate all sinful reactions and destroy all sinful desires. These pastimes of Krishna are very sweet, like shikharini, which is a blend of yogurt and camphor and honey. And this is so powerful that it defeats the nectar produced on the moon. So these pastimes are wonderful because they spread the fragrance of the sweet, loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So that's why, you know, there are so many books to read, but of course, you know, Krishna's pastimes are unlimited, so you can never really stop writing books about Krishna. So the books are unlimited, practically speaking. But to understand that Krishna is God and that Krishna is the cause of all causes, and not to be bamboozled or bewildered by many popular opinions about God not being a person, or that we're all God, or that we all become God, to just realize that Krishna is God and that Krishna is the cause of all causes, that is very rare. So even if there's this verse, how does it go? Yenyei ravindakshi vimukta mananas tvayasta bhavada vishuddhi buddhayo aruya kritrena parampadam tatata tant padadhyanti. That's right. So, you know, it says that, O lotus-eyed Lord, that impersonalists may rise to the highest level. But because they have no regard for your lotus feet, they will inevitably fall down. So, impersonalists, they may become very detached. They may have so much knowledge of the Vedas, recite so many verses, but because they don't have attachment for the lotus feet of Krishna, because they don't understand that Krishna is the kindest, the most beautiful person, therefore, ultimately they will fall down because they won't find anywhere to place their love. So this is what life is all about, you know, developing love. And that's why the Vedas, they gradually, by explaining in a systematic way the nature of the material world and all the great devotees and the genealogy of this world and all the kings, and very succinct, elaborate presentation, but ultimately it's leading us to the point of describing Krishna and Krishna's nature and Krishna's activities. And that is where we really can, if we're fortunate, develop love of Krishna. So that is rare, to actually be overwhelmed by love for Krishna. It may take many lifetimes. I'm sure it'll take me many, many lifetimes. Because, as it says in the Bhagavatam, if when you chant Hare Krishna, your eyes don't well up with tears and your heart doesn't melt when you chant, that means your heart is steel framed. So it's not so easy to develop love of Krishna, but at least if we're convinced philosophically that Krishna is God, at least if we have humility, then Krishna will empower us to understand. As Lord Brahma said, Atapi te deva padam bhuja dvaya prashada leshana grahita ivahi. He said that that just by a trace of your mercy, like a trace of your mercy, you know, when a detective's looking for a trace of evidence to find a culprit, just needs a tiny little bit of trace, a tiny little evidence. So just a tiny little particle of Krishna's mercy is enough for us to understand Krishna. So we have to get Krishna's mercy. So hearing the Vedas is how we get, how we actually become purified. Shrimbatam Swakata Krishna. How's the rest of it? Shrimbatam Swakata Krishna. Punya Shravana Kirtana. Yeah, so that means by hearing the Vedas, we become purified, and become purified, then we actually can understand these topics. So this is what life should be all about, is constantly hearing Krishna Katha and barricading ourselves from the material energy, because the material energy is very powerful. And we have to surround ourselves, just like one example I heard is that, you know, when you want to keep out the cold or the heat, you have to have good insulation. So the R value is very important. So if you don't have good R value, you're going to be very hot and very cold. So you insulate yourself, or barricade yourself from material elements and sound vibrations by surrounding yourself with Krishna consciousness. We have to build a strong barricade of spiritual substance, kirtan, reading, hearing about Krishna, because the material energy is so pervasive and so powerful that it's very easy for our mind to become infected or invaded by hearing too much mundane news. One time, Prabhupada, this was in Hari Sura's diary, devotees, there was a craze, a fad, in ISKCON, that everyone would read Time magazine. Bit out of date now, though. This is back, you know, in the 70s or whatever. And everyone was reading Time magazine, so Prabhupada said, no, this is not good, because then they will think this material world is real. The material world is not real. It's a dream. There was one, we used to sell records back in the day to collect money when, you know, there was different emergencies in ISKCON, so we would sell 33 albums. And one was called Daydream, Nightdream. Because, you know, even in the daytime, generally people only dream at night, but even in the daytime, if you think this world is real, you're living in a dream world, because it's not real. It's just a fake world, fake news, it's a fake world. So we're thinking this world is real, and we become so disturbed and so entangled in the workings of the material world. But it's only a dream. So we shouldn't take it too seriously. Just, although, you know, it's hard not to, because sometimes it seems very real when we have, you know, cancer or heart, some big problem, you know, it's not easy to get bewildered. It's hard to not get bewildered. So we have to really understand the philosophy very well, that whatever happens is Krishna's mercy. And that even in bad situations where we might not be happy, Prabhupada said, if you're not happy, you're not a devotee. Because a devotee accepts everything as Krishna's mercy. Whatever happens, that it's all for our benefit. So we have to be very grateful to be devotees. Because if you're a devotee and you really see Krishna as the Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes, that you won't begrudge anything that happens to you. This is a very important part of our philosophy, because things happen for different reasons, but Krishna is always the friend of the devotee, so we have to have that understanding that no matter what, Krishna is our friend. And so we're very lucky, and you know, we have to feel very lucky and feel very fortunate, because in this world there are so many people suffering so much because they don't have any inkling of an idea about who God is. There are many people who say they believe in God, but they don't understand that, you know, if something happens, it's for your benefit. Krishna is trying to help you overcome some attachment or whatever. So here, you know, the ladies, they're just saying that the Vedas describe Krishna. Now, if we read the Vedas, we'll see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the story of Vritrasura. So Vritrasura was previously Chitraketu. Chitraketu was also a great devotee, but he had to take birth as a demon, which probably isn't much fun, you know, getting an ugly, horrible body. And but he accepted the curse in a very, very humble mood, that he wasn't at all bewildered by having to take birth as a demon. He was actually happy about it, because he knew that when he was killed by Indra, he would go back to, actually he was praying that he would go back to Vrindavan. So he must have been a great devotee, because he knew about Vrindavan. He wasn't just a Vaikuntha Vasi, he was a Vrindavan Vasi. So, but to have to have your arms chopped off and then your head cut off by Indra's thunderbolt must have been somewhat painful. And but still, through all that, he was completely fixed on Krishna. So So this is the example we hear in the Bhagavatam of how to, you know, remain fixed even when things may not be always as we would like them to be. But we know it's all temporary. That's why we try to remember Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, Matra Sparsha Tikuntaya Shitoshna Sukadugada Agama Painu Nichas Tamtatikshishvabharata. So I always remember that when there's any upheaval in life, we have to remain sober and calm. Krishna says over and over and again in the Bhagavad Gita, he who sees friends and enemies alike, pebbles and gold alike, that person is eligible for liberation. Happiness and distress alike, then he is certainly eligible for liberation. So, but ultimately we're coming to the point of loving Krishna. And Krishna is so lovable. It's like there are so many pastimes about Krishna. And one pastime that I like, you probably know it, many of you, and it's in this really amazing book by Shiva Ramaswamy. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's beautifully narrated, the pearl story. You know the pearl story? Huh? Yeah, it's such a nice story. And the way he tells it, though, is very amusing. I'll just read a little bit, because it's really nice. Once I went to the northwest corner of Radha Kun, seated in the courtyard of a Madhavi grove beside Malya Hari Kun, I found Radha and her friends. The sight of that assembly of beautiful gopis gave me total satisfaction. Radhika sat upon a soft cloth holding pearls in her lap as she busied herself stringing a delicate necklace for whom I did not know, obviously for him. Around her sat Lalita, Bishaka and other sakis. Maidservants moved here and there, carrying pearls from one saki to another as best suited their projects. Enchanted by the gopis' exquisite movements, I watched them for some time. They stole glances at me from the corners of their eyes, but those haughty girls made no effort to acknowledge my presence. In fact, they purposefully ignored me. I cleared my throat, stepped into the courtyard, and addressed Sri Radha with all humility I could muster. "Dear Sakya," I said, "like you, have a great desire to celebrate this festival. I would like to participate by decorating my two cows, Hamsi and Harini. My humblest request is that you spare a few of your pearls for this noble purpose, and thus earn a reputation as the most magnanimous amongst the beautiful gopas of Braj." When Radha heard my request, she barely responded. She gave me nothing more than an indifferent glance. The gopis continued about their business, discreetly exhibiting the priceless gems in their laps on the lac-stained ground. I felt neglected and I accused the gopis. "Friends, has your adolescent beauty gone to your head? Have you become so proud that you cannot even hear the plea of a humble mendicant? Please listen to me for a moment." But the gopas were not about to listen. Instead, at Radha's instigation, they began to laugh, their laughter being as melodious as the sound of the Jamuna's lapping waves. Finally, Lalita Devi accosted me in her usual aggressive way. She blurted out, "Oh, hero, how is it that these pearls fit for queens and kings and now earmarked for your cows?" "I know, perhaps we should give them all to you, and that way you can decorate your entire herd." It's so funny. You don't find it funny? I understood the gopis' playful mood and replied to them in kind, "Lalita, I do not require all your pearls. Just give me a few so that I can decorate the four horns of my two favorite cows, that's all." As her friends watched from the corner of their lovely eyes, partially covered by their saris, but still more beautiful than blue lotuses, Lalita gathered her pearls together and displayed them as she jokingly said, "Hari, what can I do? I do not even see one pearl good enough for your cows." At this, I lost my temper and hastily replied, "Clever girl, forget it, just forget it. But after this, never again call me a miser." Anyway, then he got some pearls from his mother. His mother didn't want to give him any pearls. She said, you know, pearls don't grow in the ground, because he wanted to grow some pearls. So finally she agreed to give him some pearls. And she was, you know, never thought they would grow other pearls. So he said, look, this is going to work. In 3 days I'll have the most beautiful pearls. So he took the pearls and he buried them in the ground. And then he got milk from his cows. And he watered them with milk, or he, you know, irrigated them with milk. And in 3 days these huge bushes came up. And they were very big and they had purple flowers on them and they smelt very aromatic. And so then he went to see Mother Yashoda and said, look, Mother Yashoda, look what's happening. It's happening, the flowers are coming up and there's going to be beautiful pearls. So the gopis heard about this and they were upset because he was going to have better pearls than they were. And they hadn't given him any pearls, so they were getting worried. So they said, we must plant some pearls too. So meanwhile, Krishna's pearl plants produced innumerable beautiful pearls, like the best pearls you can imagine. And the gopis, they planted their pearls in the ground and they watered them. They got the best milk from the best cows, they watered the pearls, and they got thorns. They got thorn bushes. Anyway, it's a long story, but it's beautifully, it's so funny in this book, it's really amusing. But, huh?
Tell us more. Nice.
Well, I'd have to read it. Ultimately, what happened was, you know, they had to go and beg Krishna for some of his pearls, and he said, no, I'm not going to give you any of my pearls. You didn't give me any of your pearls. Why would I give you some of my pearls? But then, you know, they persuaded him because he was... anyway. Now, perplexed, the gopas looked at one another. Nandamukhi went on, this wonder was made possible by the mystic potency of Vrindavan's soil. Now the gopis were skeptical, but Nandamukhi continued to support her assertions. The soil of Vrindavan is transcendental. It produces so many kinds of precious and semi-precious jewels. I know this to be true from the beginning for the teaching of Noble Purnamasi, and you have seen it for yourselves. Are there not, among other ornate wonders, golden trees with coral twigs, emerald leaves, diamond buds, and ruby fruits growing in this land? Of course there are. Then why make such a commotion about a few cultivated pearls? The pearls Krishna planted grow by the influence of the soil. If you plant pearls, and if you water them abundantly with milk and butter, your pearls would be superior to Krishna's. Anyway, it goes on. It's a long story here, but it's really worth reading. You should get the book. It's funny.
What's the name of the book?
Huh? Have you ever read it?
What's the name of the book?
Krishna Sangati. You can get them from... what's the name? Apurva's wife, Kamalini. She distributes, she wrote some of his books, but that story is just so funny. Anyway, the whole book's very good, interesting. So anyone have any questions or comments or reflections?
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you go out and tell people, you know, this world is full of suffering. He said, what is suffering?
When you tell them what?
Suffer. When you go out and tell people, this world is full of suffering.
Yeah.
He said, what is suffering? I don't suffer.
Uh-huh.
So what is the conception of suffering? I have some idea. But what is... Prabhupada said that Krishna says, birth, death, old age, disease, that is suffering.
Right.
What is actually like relevant to their experience?
I don't usually tell them the world is full of suffering because they won't agree because they're busy trying to enjoy it. So that's not one of my lines. I do say, have you ever heard of anxiety? Because they've all heard of anxiety.
Mm.
So I try not to convince them the world is full of suffering because then they, you know, then you have a battle on your hands trying to convince them it's full of suffering. So I don't say that. But everybody knows about anxiety. So I mean, yeah, if they can't see the suffering, of course they can't, because their minds are contemplating sense gratification, so they don't really see the suffering. But I try to keep it more positive, you know, when I distribute the books. Like I say, you know, I point out the Sanskrit language, and I say this is such a complicated language, how could we have evolved? It's the oldest language in the world. It takes 12 years to learn the grammar. The vocabulary is much bigger than English. Even the scientists at NASA were using it in their computers. I say it was spoken to the sun god, you know, I mean, I say they still haven't figured out how the pyramids were built. Everyone knows that. They still haven't figured out how the pyramids were built. I was reading this thing about the pyramids. It said that some of the stones, they're all solid pieces of granite, and they're 200 tons, and they moved them 500 miles to the site of the pyramids, wow. And there's thousands of them. There's enough of them to build a wall around France 10 feet high. A wall all the way around France, 10 feet high. And they still haven't figured out how the pyramids were built. So I try to make it kind of interesting like that. So I say, you know, the Sanskrit language is because people were more intelligent. It's a much more complicated language. We didn't evolve, we devolved. So I say stuff like that. Mm. Yeah.
Thank you. So just in light of your last comment, although we know the material world isn't real, but especially in the context of preaching, we can't really say that to people, that it's not real, because to them it is very real, right?
No, I say it's not real to people sometimes. I tell them it's like a dream. You know when you have a nightmare at night? You wake up and you know, the you didn't really get eaten by a tiger, you didn't really get eaten by spiders or something. So, you know, it was just a dream. So I tell people that, you know, this world is not your real life. Because I explain, you know, showing people the picture of the changing bodies, how your body changes every 7 years. So if you're 21 years old, you've had three different bodies, right? You had a baby body, you had a young child's body, now you have a young adult's body. Your baby body's gone, but you're the same person, aren't you? You just have a different body. That means you're different from your body, right? So I say, you know, this, all the material things are not reality, they're just illusion, because they change. Anyway, I don't get into big talks like that unless I'm really meet someone who's very interested and, you know, has the intelligence to understand.
Doesn't Prabhupada say sometimes, he doesn't, sometimes he says it's not real, but sometimes he says it is real. The main thing is that it's temporary.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, like a dream is temporary. But is a dream real? It's a real dream, but because it's very quick, you don't take it too seriously.
Right.
But it's not that easy to think like that.
I think he says both. He says both, that it's real, it's not real, but the main thing is that it's temporary.
No, I mean, Prabhupada went through suffering. You could say, well, you know, it's not really suffering, but he said it was. So one time he was explaining how, you know, he was really struggling. He didn't have any money. It was very difficult. And he was saying to his disciples, you know, it was so difficult and I had a lot of anxiety. But he said, you know, that it was real anxiety. So there is real anxiety and there is real suffering. And to really just discount it as being a dream is a bit, you know, blasé or whatever the word you use. But it is a fact that we can't take it too seriously. Mm-hmm. You can take it seriously to some degree, but you can't get depressed about it. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, you have to depend on Krishna and not get too bothered. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. One mm-hmm. who is unaffected by happiness and distress is certainly eligible for liberation.
Thank you.
Easier said than done. Yes, Nilesh Prabhu.
Prabhu, you're talking about the illusion and Maya and the material world being a dream. I have a little different in opinion, because we just read in the translation is that he is the creator, annihilator and maintainer. So if this is a dream, he cannot create a dream. So since it's emanating from Krishna, it is real, because the consequences are also real. So if I were to take this as a dream, and I do whatever I want to do, any nonsense which I want to do, especially the four regulative principles go exactly opposite to that, mm-hmm. I have real world consequences. I will be coming back. The question is about being temporary. So if it is an emanation of Krishna, if it's a creation of Krishna, it has to be real.
Yeah, it's real, but you know, it's not our real existence. It's not a real existence because we're eternal, and you know, we have a body which is so finite, it can be destroyed at any moment. So, you know, we don't really, we try not to become bewildered by the material energy. I'm just repeating what Prabhupada said, you know, like he said that people reading Time magazine, they shouldn't read Time magazine because they'll think it's very real, this world. And it's not. We should focus on the real world. The real world is a spiritual world. This place is a prison.
We're reading Krishna Times, we're not reading New York Times.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam.
I'm reading.